All right, so it was very interesting, it was fortuitous. I had no idea we were going to sing Imagine today, but it actually very apropos. As usual, Nancy always picks the songs that are just right, because we're going to talk just a little bit about...
Pam picked it.
Oh, Pam picked it. In that case, Pam always picks the songs that are just right. And, of course, this song has always... I've always found this song a paradox. And certainly, when we used to sing it in Presbyterian church, I thought it was a paradox, because we were imagining a religion in a religion, but I guess we were just trying to be... It was 1970, and we were trying to be hip and youthful. But if we imagine no religion, then what the heck are we doing here? Which is, of course, the UU conundrum, right? The old joke about how do you know when your neighbors want you to leave, they burn a question mark on your lawn if you're a UU, right? So what the heck are you doing here? Why did you come today? And, you know, what brings you back from your mini summer adventures? Why not just stay out there on the beach or wherever you were? I thought we would just go around and maybe, as you feel prompted, just maybe mention why it is that we come together. Why do we come? If we have a religion that doesn't demand any theological commitment, what the heck are you doing here?
For me, this community is very important to support exactly that. To affirm that we do have, I won't say religion, I don't think that's the right word, but a community, a belief system of some kind that draws us together.
So a belief system of some kind, maybe not a religion, but a community, okay?
The root of the word religion just means to connect to wholeness. Religare is, I believe, is Latin for ligament, and it's a word that just means connecting to our wholeness.
Wow, you stole my thunder. I have that right here. It's the next thing I'm going to talk about. Good job.
Sorry, did I say it right?
Yeah.
Okay, because it's been a while since I've heard a UU minister who is kind of heretical in UU circles, but he explained it that way years ago, and I've always really liked that because that's what I feel about why I... And it's for me, it's a fellowship of people who feel in similar ways.
So a fellowship of like believers.
Yeah. I mean, I worked last night till late. I stayed up a little bit later. I had some trouble sleeping anyway, and yet I'm still here because it was really important to me to be here.
To be with everybody.
Yeah. Yeah. And so it's about the fellowship and the connection.
I'm still running through my mind the idea of a heretical Unitarian. Yeah. But we'll let that pass.
You know, I probably will talk later.
Okay. Yes.
The sharing of joys and concerns to me is a very important part of the service, but it sort of informs the whole reason we're here, the whole time we gather, and that I don't think what it believes so much is just valuing wholeness both individually and as a community. And sometimes I'm cranky dad trying to get everybody to go. I say some Sundays you don't cook for yourself, you go for other people.
Yeah.
I was trying to explain to Michael this morning that we were going to go to church, but it's not church. And trying to explain to him exactly what we would do here. And I showed him the seven principles on the little bookmark, which is very handy, and said, you know, it's really kind of about a morality, a source of morality that doesn't come from doctrine or commandments. It's more of a way to kind of support ourselves and each other and being trying to live better and more moral and caring lives. And I think to me it's nice to have kind of a reminder and a support to try to follow the principles as best I can. And I think if I just kind of ignored it for a year or two, 3 months is okay, but if I didn't have that kind of reminder and support, then I wouldn't be as driven to try to follow those rules, which I hold for myself anyway.
So kind of reinforcement of the principles.
I remember Monica Offrey once saying that her mother said to her, well, if you don't believe in God, then what keeps you from killing your neighbor? And Monica told her mother, if God's the only reason you don't kill your neighbor, I think we're a little
worried about it.
And that really kind of struck me that, yeah, you don't have to have. And I explained to him that we do have people who are theists, monotheists, polytheists, here, and we have atheists too, and it's really just kind of a source of goodness and a way to kind of try to be a more moral and better person.
Yeah, Uni.
I have a lot of people in this room work an academic calendar, and this time of the year I'm always sad when the summer comes to an end, but I remind myself there's work to be done because a lot of people need us. We do good things out there. And for me, a gathering like this helps guide my work in the world. Kind of piggybacking on what Nikki just said, to remind me of why I do what I do and to provide the guiding principles for that work.
Yeah, Pippa.
The thing that I come here for is the compassion, because I don't really know what I believe, and I'm sure that like none of us like all believe the exact same thing, so then why do we all come here? We all have to have something in common, and that is that we all care about each other. And I just, like, it's an open community. Is that word that you like?
Open.
We don't care, like, who we all are. We care about each other. And I like that.
So care in support of your ongoing desire to know what you believe and not caring if you don't believe the same thing. Yeah. Yes?
When I talk about what we do here, for people who haven't been, I often mention the fact that we read a story to the children at the beginning of the ceremony. And to me, that's a really powerful metaphor for how I think we think as Unitarians, and it represents the fact that we listen, because we all listen together, but we're also listening to something that is sometimes forgotten or not. Children don't have a voice, but we give them a voice by not only letting them have Ari, but joining with them and listening to something that's meaningful to them, but also the fact that we often gain from that. Those metaphors of those stories that are very childlike are often so powerful and meaningful. So to me, that kind of represents a lot of what we do and think about as Unitarians, but don't necessarily voice. I mean, I love the metaphor.
Yeah. Yes, Dennis.
Yeah, one of the things I'm reminded of whenever I come here is the concept that we're all related and that we're all connected at some level regardless of our genetics and our beliefs. And it's reminded me over and over again of the how parallel the UU philosophy is with Native American concepts, which I've come to cherish over the years. And I'm going to have an opportunity to meet Ellen C. Ross, who is a Dakota, a Lakota, primary Lakota, at the gathering. He's going to come to my house. I'm going to get to know him there. And he wrote a book called Takawasi, which means we're all related. He's going to talk about those concepts on Sunday. So I'm really excited, too, about that and see what he has to say, because I'm reading his book for the second time now.
So this congregation sort of jibes with other fellowships that you have that have similar beliefs.
Not so much fellowships. I guess I suppose the Native American
philosophies
and values would be more of a cultural identification in terms of values. Yeah, I've never found a group like this where it had some connection to religion in some way, the traditional, that I found very helpful. This is a comfortable place to come back to.
Yeah.
I think this Unitarian Fellowship is it's a chosen faith. Many of us were raised in other faith traditions, and and I think we've chosen this, and I think all of us have a certain amount of authenticity because we've looked at this and we're and it fits well with what we believe, and it, all of us have different beliefs, but it's what we've chosen.
Yeah, and actually that was the title of a book written by former president of a national body, right? The chosen faith is what we choose. We tend to be sifters, you know, weighers, and then we choose very carefully. Yeah. Any others? Yes?
Well, I come to be with people who accept me, even if I wear a tie. And I have a feeling I would be the only one with a tie, but I could. All right, this is me, this is my Sunday morning, and I'm going to wear my tie. But more important than that, I come because we all accept each other, and yet we are all different. And I was just floored by the words of this John Lennon song this morning. Just think of it. Imagine there's no heaven. Right on. Now, the next one was harder. Imagine there are no countries. Well, that's a little harder. And it goes on. And just, I'm going to take that. I think I should frame it because that really expresses what I believe, and I never knew it existed.
Well, I accept you even more for wearing a tie. As people who know me in my work day, I'm always wearing a tie, so I approve.
Ray. I have to second Fred on the acceptance that's here and the openness. I spent much of my life reciting the Nicene Creed. And it says we're all together, but we're again those people who are out there. And I don't find that here. So the barrier isn't there. And there can be a search for the spiritual when the barriers are down. And you can have another definition of God if you choose to use that word.
Yes. Yeah.
Well, I think this is also probably speaking some cliches here. We're, for the most part, as social creatures, you know, we're seeking out our own, our connections, our communities, and all this kind of stuff like that. And the saying about how, you know, to raise a child, it's not just, you know, one or two people, it's a community, it's a tribe, it's a fellowship, whatever that helps raise, you know, that's what raises a child. But in the same gist, you know, are we ever fully grown up, you know, and as us as a whole, I mean, we're all learning and taking and sharing with each other in here, and we all get something out of this. We all learn a little bit. Something different, something new, from all our different walks of life. And the way I kind of almost look at this is, you know, we all kind of move to our own beat of our own drum here, yet we all kind of share a rhythm.
Yeah, I like that. And it goes with the music theme, so that's perfect. Well, I was going to, as I said, Debbie already sort of mentioned this, but if you look up the definition of religion, it enters the English language, about 1200. It means a state of life bound by monastic vows. But that goes back to the Latin religare, and this is actually Cicero's etymology, the Roman Cicero. And religare means to go through again, or in reading and thought, from read again, and ligare is to read, which is slightly different than ligament, actually. So that's a little bit. But Cicero's, you know, etymologies are kind of can be a little shaky. But what he said about it was that it meant to read through again. But then another interpretation is this whole idea of religare, to bind fast, as in ligament. to place an obligation on or bond between in humans and gods or humans and other humans. But this notion of holding together, you know, of being a group that comes together and is bound in a certain way to certain principles. And so it does not necessarily mean that you have to be bound to a certain particular deity. It can just mean to come together to a certain principles. And I think that one of the things that makes UU's unique is that we're known as a creedal religion, which is that we've agreed to our creed, but we don't make any restrictions on what your metaphysics might be. But that just brings the question back again, which is like, well, okay, we come together and we live certain values, but then how do we approach the idea of the sacred, which is our first theme? So I just want to say a couple of things about the word sacred, which is the past participle adjective from the obsolete verb sacred, to make holy. Now that's a mouthful, but I think the thing that struck me as I was reading this is that it's originally a verb, to make holy. And it comes from the Latin root, and it means to sanctify. And I think that what's important about that notion, and I know from a lot of the work that I do, a lot of the research that I do, that religion is more about constructing the sacred than about fighting over what's real and what's not real, but rather how are we going to construct, to make something sacred. You know, that we need to actually work at it, and we often have to work at it in a group together to bring the sacred into being. It's not like there's a lot of times there's a sort of where we get into fights in religion is where there's a sort of mystique about it. The sacred comes from over there, from that holy water or from that particular symbol, or you have to go to this church or something like that, whereas it's really the other way around. The sacred starts here with what we create. You know, if that water is holy, it's because we've decided to get together and sanctify it, not that it in and of itself is holy, or you know, everything's holy. You could say nothing's holy or everything's holy. But to make things sacred, it's something we work on together. And I think that that's a particularly beneficial idea for Unitarians, that this is our work, is to make things sacred. Not just be sort of lazy and say, well, that's already been done, and we just have to show up, and the sacred will be sort of be poured on top of us or emanate from something, will be irradiated by it, but rather, how are we going to make the sacred happen? And I think that's really one of the things that does unite us as we come together. And of course, we're not going to agree on how to do that because we're Unitarians. But I thought I would read a poem, because that's my thing. That's my access to the sacred. This poem is by Wendell Berry. And I thought it was a good way to unite the water idea and the idea of the sacred. It's called The Springs, and it's very short. In a country without saints or shrines, I knew one who made his pilgrimage to springs, where in his life's dry years, his mind held on. Everlasting, people called them and gave them names. The water broke into sounds and shinings at the vein mouth, bearing the taste of the place, the deep rock, sweetness out of the dark. He bent and drank in bondage to the ground. So he begins the poem, in a country without saints or shrines, right? So it's a sort of Protestant Kentucky poem of a very thinly settled land, you know, with only 100 years or so of tradition. If you've been, like I spent a lot of time in Germany, and every little shrine, every little spring had a shrine and was associated with a Catholic saint, which previously had been a Celtic demigod of some sort. So the land is like deeply invested with various religious powers. So we're in a country without saints or shrines, but I knew one who made his pilgrimage. So how can you make a pilgrimage without saints or shrines? As if the act of pilgrimage, going on a pilgrimage, the act creates the sacred again. He's going on a pilgrimage to springs, where in his life's dry years, his mind held on. And I think when we are looking for the sacred, we're looking for water when we're dry. We're looking for ways to refresh. To some, for some, the word is whole. We're looking for ways to moisten our spirit, right? Everlasting, people called them. There are no saints, no shrines, and yet these springs are called everlasting, which is a kind of religious term, right? But what they meant was the springs didn't dry up in the summer. There are springs that are only in the spring, and there are springs that last through the hot, dry summer. You know, as we said, California is experiencing the drying up of everlasting springs. But this spring is called everlasting. They gave them names, right? They named these things and made them important. The water broke into sounds and shinings at the vein mouth, bearing the taste of the place, the deep rock sweetness out of the dark. And I think that's when we're saying something like the sacred or the religious, we're often acknowledging that the sweetness comes from a source outside of ourselves, comes from something bigger than we are. And then he bent and drank in bondage to the ground. So that when you come together for religious purposes, you're sort of saying, things are bigger than I am, and I'm going to bind myself to those things. I'm going to choose, right? I'm going to choose to be with these people, and I'm going to choose to construct the sacred together. So that's my thought, and I think that perhaps what will help kick us off, I hope, will help kick us off into this discussion of the sacred, which will immediately be followed by the discussion of the humanist tradition, which has been so important in deconstructing the sacred. So I think that part of what makes us so interesting as a people is that we live in this tension, that if the sacred is constructed, it's only going to be there if we make it. So that's kind of not so, you know, trustworthy as saying, well, there's a true cross and there's the, you know, there's the one God and there's the heaven and all those things that we can depend on. If we're creating it, that's a lot of work. And yet, that's why we're here. All right, so if we will rise, we are going to sing our final hymn, which is on your song sheet, and it's one of our old favorites, Blue Boat Home.
I wanted to say we're down a bass player this morning. Matt Horn is sick, and it really kind of emphasized we're a little lost without him. In that, yes. We really do need each other.
It's hard work constructing the sacred. be seated. We will now have closing music followed by a brief period for silent meditation. Go in peace.
Well done.
Thank you,
sir. Well done.
Thank you.